Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mliwa Kabaza, and for today, we are talking about something that is topical in South Africa, and that is the issue of free education, particularly at a tertiary level, in light of the recent Fees Must Fall protests that have erupted, once again. I don't know what word to use, but I'm old enough and young enough to remember when Fees Must Fall first reared its head back in 2015, 2016, when I was still in university. And the fact that this is still an issue in 2021, is one of those things that we really do need to speak about. And for today, we are joined by Dr. Oscar Van Heerden, who is the director of Kelelo Consulting, which has been operating in the education space for the last two decades, to maybe get a take on, some of these issues. What free education, is that a possibility in South Africa, just given everything that the country is grappling with? Dr. Oscar, greetings to you.
Good day to you and to your listeners.
No, thank you so much for being with us. I think a good place for us to start is maybe getting a sense of your interest when it comes to, Fees Must Fall. We saw that you recently had an article around it. We said just now that Kelelo Consulting has been in the education space for the last two decades. So from that point of view, could you talk to us just around how you are approaching the issue of, free education in South Africa, from what viewpoint, vantage point, and your interest in the space?
No, thanks, Madhua. I mean, as Kelelo Consulting, we've been operating since 2000, and generally, looking at a number of different facets within the education sphere, whether it is the use of technology in education and how that can assist in learning, and as well as the sector education and training sector environment, the CTES and vocational training, and then of course also generally doing extensive research work for various clients around universities, schools, etc. And it's in this context that when Busani and Wandile and Kaweni decided to write a book around Fees Must Fall called We Are No Longer at Ease, they then requested two of the directors of Kelelo, myself and Professor Nikki Roberts, to actually pen an article for the book in which we felt that South Africa is not ready for free higher education. And we give a number of reasons for that and put forward an argument that really says that resources that is made available to higher education can best be utilized in other parts of the education sector. In a nutshell, that was our argument.
No, thank you so much for that. I think, you've already started touching on what is likely the question on everyone's minds, all of these years later, to say, is free education in South Africa, is it a fantasy or is it a possible reality? And I think you had already started alluding to, given the resources, the best use of whatever limited resources that there are at the moment would not be, for free education. I can only imagine that is not a popular opinion, just given everything that's going on.
No, absolutely. It's not a popular opinion. And the fact of the matter is that, as student organizations, both the Congress of South African Students in the high school sector, COSAS, as well as the South African Student Congress, SASCO, obviously for years during the apartheid era, demanded free education, both at the school level as well as at the university level. And so we must appreciate that historical phenomenon, you know, that historical position. Coming into the new South Africa, given the apartheid past, given the discrepancies within our education system, given the fact that a lot of Black students came from historically disadvantaged communities and had to go through what was known as Bantu education, one can understand where they locate the demand for free higher education. So that's the historical component. The reality, however, is that it's not so much, the question is not so much whether it is a fantasy, it is whether it is feasible, whether it is viable financially and otherwise. And that is the critical question. And so you can imagine, Madhuwe, that with the advent of our democracy in 1994, there were a plethora of strategic issues that needed to be addressed. You know, besides the universal suffrage and giving each and every South African citizens the right to vote and decide their political future and who should govern them, which of course was an important thing. But besides that, there were other critical issues that had to be addressed: primary health care, the health sector, education, the general welfare of our people, and so forth. And so, you know, what people don't realize is that when we talk of higher education, institutions of higher learning, for every 100 students that entered the schooling system at grade R, 100 students enter, only 12 of those make it to university. So in other words, after the 12-year, the 13-year schooling period, 12 of those 100 make it to university. And what is even more important is that only 4 of those 12 come from non-fee paying schools. I want to repeat that. 12 make it to university, only 4 of them are from non-fee paying schools. So what that actually means is that those are the 4, and we put forward an argument that says, if you want to talk about free higher education or support for students in the higher education sector, then we should talk about those 4 students and not all 12 that needs support. So that, I think, is an important element. So yes, we can hope and we can dream about a system where it's free and all higher education is free. But the reality is that practically, from a financial and a fiscus point of view, can we as South Africans afford it? And we argue that we cannot.
Now, Dr. Van Heerden, as you're talking, one of the things I'm thinking about is, you know, my own days back in university when I was at Rhodes. One of the things I came to appreciate was the fact that for the level of education that is given in South Africa's 23 to 26 institutions of higher learning, specifically universities, that, you know, the education is considered to be world class, with a number of universities, you know, appearing, you know, in lists of top universities around the world, you know, and things like that. But one of the things that you start to appreciate is that the level of subsidy, as much as you know, free education, as you're saying, might still be a stretch, there is considerable subsidy still going towards students. I think I stand for correction on the numbers here, but I remember during my time at least being told that it costs about 300,000 rand to educate a tertiary student in a year, but that Most of the time, the subsidies were about two-thirds of whatever that amount is, and then the student would only pay one-third. So with fees must for still being an issue, wouldn't you say that also then highlights the extent to which the socioeconomic situation in South Africa is still just dire for the normal person on the street?
Well, exactly. I mean, even those discrepancies that you are talking about, they are discrepancies even amongst the universities. It is obvious why the students at UCT, at Wits, are in the forefront of these protests every year. And that is because the fee structures at those institutions are much higher. If you compare it with students at, for example, UJ, but let's talk about Walter Sisulu University or Fort Hare University, then you find that sometimes it's three times higher than those institutions. And so the small amounts that NSFAS can provide to those deserving students at UCT and Wits is a far fall sh shortfall of what they actually require. And that's why there's more anger and more demand that we need to be supported, that we need to be subsidized, and so forth. So I'm saying that even amongst the universities, there are discrepancies. If it was a blanket general position that these are where you cap some of the fees for all institutions, that in itself will go a long way in being able to actually put money into the system and accommodate the demands of a large amount of the students. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, of course, part of the problem is exactly as you say, a socioeconomic problem. And let me introduce another angle that people very rarely look at, and that is that we have a comprehensive social security system in South Africa. Even though there isn't a lot of money in the fiscus, for obvious reasons, we look after our aged, the old people, the pensioners. We look after those that have disabilities, foster care, as well as this huge component, as you know, which is a child support grant. Now, 17 million people already on the social security system. But here's the catch. You have students at higher learning institutions that get the subsidy from NSFAS, and that subsidy is much higher, in some cases more than your old age pension. A student gets 3,000, 2,500, 3,500 in some cases, and there is pressure on that student to also provide with what is going on at home, where there is no food on the table for siblings and for parents, where there is no money for electricity and basic services. And so you find a situation where students are taking that money, they keep a portion for themselves, the bare minimum to pay perhaps for food and accommodation and tuition, but then they also buy food for back home, or they send money back home because they also want to provide for what the dire situation back home. And so the NSFAS money, in a way, becomes a additional social grant. And that is also part of the problem. For as long as we are going to have unemployment, poverty, inequality, then that money is obviously going to be seen as a way of lifting families out of that dire situation. And I think that is part of why students fight so vigorously and burn and destroy, because it's not just them that need the money, but actually the extended family as well.
Dr. Van Heerden, as you're talking, I'm just trying to do some scenarios in my head. And one of the things that I can't help but to think about is if education at a tertiary level is made free, does that not then result in a situation where money that would directly come to perhaps like a student's bank account, the 2,500, 3,500 that you're talking about, Doesn't that eliminate that aspect?
No, it doesn't, because when we say things are free, it's not actually free. What I mean by that, is that someone has to pay. You know, someone has to the money must move from point A into the account of the university, which is point B, and that money must pay for accommodation, tuition, food, textbooks, etc., etc. So it's not that it's going to be free, and therefore there's no money that is circulating. People still need to be paid, you know. So the subsidy and the assistance to students will still have to be paid by government and by taxpayers, if we now take it to its logical conclusion, because it's taxpayers' money that will have to subsidize this 12% of our population. Another unpopular point that we make in our article, Modua, is that because it's 12%, they are part of the privileged few. They are actually a privileged component of society. They are elite. They are elite. And so, you know, to demand and insist that government must give you money to be able to do something that is going to continue your privilege, as opposed to putting that money somewhere else. So one of the arguments that we raise in our article is that, you know, we've now recently, in recent days, we've seen that the cabinet has approved an additional 7 billion rand to be put into the NSFAS system in order to yet again ensure that first year entrance students are having the necessary money for registration and so on and so forth. And the argument we put forward in our article is that that 7 billion could have gone much further if it had been put into early childhood development, if it had been put into the first 3 or 4 years of primary school, where we are experiencing severe stunted pupils because of malnutrition, because of food shortages, because of poverty. And as a result, we have large numbers of dropouts before they get to high school or in the first 2 years of high school, because they can't cope. They've not received the proper foundation in terms of education. Some can't read, can't write. Now, when you put 7 billion rand into that sector of the education, you are going to have much better results in terms of, you know, the fruits that you will be able to enjoy 12, 15 years down the line, instead of just putting it into this elite 12% of our society. So I think that for me is a primary issue going forward.
You know, as you're talking, the other thing that, you know, strikes me is the fact that you are willing to look, you know, past, I guess, the problems of today and sort of go back and look at, you know, find the foundational issues like what you're saying, you know, early childhood development and, you know, all of these things. You know, so I think, and I can definitely see an argument, you know, on your end, but at the same time seeing where the argument is for the people that are literally faced with tuition bills today and saying, you know, I want to be able to get educated right now, right here, right now, you know.
Can I also just add to that? It seems to me, Madua, that because tertiary education students, university students, can scream the loudest, can toy, can turn cars upside down, can burn things down, can fight with police, they then get heard, they then get accommodated, they then get allocated money. Whereas the youngsters, you know, at grade R and the lower levels, they can't scream, they can't toy, they can't burn things down. And as a result, they get ignored.
That is a reality. I think just given everything that is going on at the moment, since there is, that argument to be made about, what happened before, what's actually in front of us. One of the things that is in front of us at this time is COVID-19 and the pandemic, and it's and one of the things, just going back to what you're talking about earlier on about, special social spending by the government, that has seen, a massive increase over the pandemic period and all of that. So, from your estimation, what has the pandemic done to all of the fundamental issues that you are highlighting today?
Well, quite a few things, the first being obviously that it has brought to the fore our how not ready we are, how not ready we are for actually entering the 21st century with 4IR. One of the things that COVID has done, as you would appreciate, is to say we need to utilize and be much more open to using smart devices in order to connect virtually. Now, one of the things that we've come to appreciate is that universities and the TVET sector was completely unprepared for that eventuality. So on the one hand, they speak lyrically about not being left behind, having to be part of the fourth industrial revolution. But we have connectivity problems, we have high data costs, and we don't have the infrastructure for our students to actually learn virtually. Now, I'm the first to admit a lot of universities very quickly wrapped their heads around it, made certain tablets and devices available. Schools, particularly in the private sector, was able to quickly provide or put the burden on parents to buy these devices and so on. And so, to a very large extent, we can argue that we've coped under the circumstance. But the fact of the matter is, universities, students, and ultimately we, the taxpayer, still had to carry the brunt of high costs. We had to carry the brunt of purchasing these devices for our children because we want them to get good quality education. And so we broke the bank to make sure that we provide those things when, in fact, we should have had these systems in place. Governments should have made sure by now that there is sufficient connectivity, that there is sufficient low data costs. Why there is these piecemeal deals with Vodacom and MTN and Cell C around students and learners having to pay less for data, as bo it boggles the mind. Because if you want to compete in a first world environment with Europe and Americas, then we are supposed to force these companies through legislation to actually say it must be zero-based. Data must cost nothing if you are busy learning and developing your mind. But we are not there yet. That is another debate altogether. So that was one of the implications of COVID. Then the second implication, as you rightfully point out, government had to put an emphasis on the more immediate and where the need was the highest. I mean, we lost 2 million jobs in the sector, across the sectors within the economy. That's 2 million families immediately destitute. And so government had to put resources and make available resources into the unemployment fund, had to push up some of the social grants, had to introduce a special COVID-19 grant to accommodate an additional 6 million people that had nothing. As you know, that grant comes to an end at the end of next month because government simply cannot afford to continue. But the point is, how it relates to higher education is in the midst of all of this, in the midst of this crunch and this tightness of the fiscus, where there is little resources and we're trying to accommodate to the majority of our population and citizens, you have students, 12% of elite students who toy and make noise and say, we don't care. We don't want to hear about there not being enough money. We want our money and we want it now. at the expense of all of that, even if it means that the government at some point will have to go and borrow more money and increase its debt ratio to GDP. They simply don't care.
Dr. Van Eerden, you know, one of the things that you've just brought out is the fact that because of social spending, it does put, you know, increasing strain on an already strained system. But I want to focus on one of the points that you mentioned to say that as South Africa, as much as we're having all of these issues in South Africa, there is something to be said about how South Africa fits into the global economy, because you highlighted the US and Europe and what's happening there. But students in the US in particular, at tertiary level, are also facing their own crisis related to fees, and they're facing an issue of a student debt crisis, whereas students in South Africa are fighting for free education. But one of the things that's really come out and started being questioned because of the student debt crisis in the US is the actual need for tertiary education. To say, is it really necessary for young people to have a degree? Do you think the same question could and should be asked in a country like South Africa?
Look, I think that everyone will agree around the importance and the critical contribution that higher education makes in any country. So, you know, do we need to have graduates who specialize in scarce skills? Absolutely. And do we need to spend top dollars, to use the phrase, in ensuring that they get quality and good education and learning? By all means. We need the best engineers. We need the best medical doctors. We need the best of everything, teachers, and so on. Having said that, I do think that there is an argument in a country such as South Africa, who also have very clear third world trades, where an emphasis must be put on the vocational education side of things. Not everyone will be able to get to university and get a degree. But that doesn't mean that you are not able to make a valuable contribution to society and to your community. That is why years later, I think, that's why the South African government decided to reignite the TVET college sector. As you know, there was a time when that was not happening. Teacher training colleges were closed, nursing colleges were closed, etc. These are now all being accommodated back into the university system. But the fact of the matter is that equal emphasis must be placed on vocational training, where we have electricians, plumbers, carpenters, and so on and so forth. And we need to have a system where we mustn't see that as lesser than those that went to university. Not at all. As you know, in countries like Germany, both streams are valued equally. They give the necessary importance to those that have actually gone the vocational route. And the, you know, I have a friend, for example, who studied carpentry in Germany. And at a certain point, you get to what they call master carpenter. In other words, you have now reached the pinnacle of your profession in terms of carpentry. Now, when you are a master carpenter, they then say, if you are so inclined and want to still pursue a university degree, you can then laterally move into the university sector at a first degree level. In other words, the fact that you are a master carpenter, the university will accept that you already have completed a first degree and you can then do honors or masters at university level. Now, we don't have that in South Africa. And because of that system in Germany and in other places, there is that respect that is afforded to those who went to the vocational training colleges and got vocational you know, experience. And so we have a long way to still go on that front as well within our system here in South Africa. So Mujua, just to conclude, since I've been controversial throughout the interview, I thought I'd leave you with food for thought on a controversial point. I've not done extensive research on this, but I do want to also say that when we look globally at leading institutions of higher learning, universities that are in the top 15, top 20 universities in the world, you know, whether it is Harvard, in the US, Yale, Princeton, whether it is Cambridge in the United Kingdom and Oxford University. These are fee-paying universities, people with very high standards. People want to, because they pay, they want to get out what they've paid for. And as a result, there is high levels of accountability and making sure that there is quality learning and quality degrees that are being pushed out. And I just think that we need to think about what does that mean in comparison to a system where free education, free higher education, there's that level of, you know, what does it mean? What does it mean? And I think there's some food for thought there when we talk of free education in the higher education sector. Thank you.
So that's been us with Dr. Oscar Van Heerden, who is a director at Kelelo Consulting, which has been operating in the education space for about 2 decades, giving us his take just around this issue of fees must fall. We've seen that students have, you know, taken to the streets to, you know, fight for free education at a tertiary level, you know, once again in South Africa. And he's just giving us, you know, some takes just from a book. They were involved in a book and they continue to do their research around these issues. And he's highlighting a number of different aspects, saying that even though it's not a popular opinion, there are other ways that scarce state resources could be used to perhaps address issues at an early stage in early childhood development, for example. And he's saying that because of some of those things, the fundamental issues do get exposed when you look at the way that COVID-19 then came about, and also expose the fact that connectivity is still very expensive in South Africa, because the moment that students have to learn online, then it becomes out of reach for many students that don't have access to computers and whose internet access costs are still high, and, you know, just sort of showing that you know, the resources of the country, you know, should and could be used for many other and different ways. Just ending off talking about the importance of degrees together with, you know, vocational learning as well.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
The most valuable type of debate and discussion is where you can sit down and have an appreciation of both sides of the coin. And one of the things that I liked about talking to Dr. Van Heerden is that he's taken it upon himself, together with his team, to look at what's happening on the other side of the coin, to say that yes, free education is something that we could do, but is that the best use of our resources as a country, to say that, you know, perhaps we should be fixing what's going on at the lower levels, at the most basic levels, look at early childhood development, so that you can at the top, you then can improve some of those ratios, because 12% is quite an alarming rate, to say that if 100 kids get into school at the age of 5, at the age of 6, that only 12 of them are going to actually be able to do something at tertiary level, right? If we can invest in the pipeline early on, you know, so that we increase those ratios at the top, then it means you have a greater chance of whatever scarce resources that are there. There is a greater, you know, impetus to make sure that resources are being funneled also towards the top, because you're now accounting for more people and you're no longer just accounting for, you know, a few privileged. At the same time, whilst all of that is being said, right, when you look at the issue of free education in South Africa, there was a promise, you know, because we talk about, you know, the demands of students and all of that, but there was a promise, you know, given, you know, whether you're talking at independence and things like that, that in the new South Africa, that students and that young people would be given access to institutions of higher learning and issues like that. And given the macroeconomic situation, I mean, on this platform alone, we spend many hours talking about the economic devastation of the last couple of years, especially now that we have COVID-19 in the mix, talking about rates of contraction. And before lockdown, we're looking at barely 1% economic growth and all of these issues. So given everything that's happening, the loss of 2 million jobs, it is understandable why people, you know, say that they should be able to gain that access, because university degrees are a good path for a person to, you know, climb up the economic ranks and ladders. But at the same time, you know, just appreciating what Dr. Van Heerden is saying, to say that not everyone should be getting a degree, just given the structure of our economy, that there are a lot of people making good living, starting good businesses, having gone the vocational route, right? All of these things just point to an issue that is not simple, that is not flat, that we can't just apply a one size fits all sort of fix on it. It is a complex issue. It is something that people will be grappling with. And as alluded to during the discussion, students in the United States are facing a similar crisis, but theirs comes from a student debt point of view, right? The state isn't giving out free education, but rather to go to the elite colleges or to get that university level education, people are going into debt, and that debt sort of haunts them as they get into their professional careers, start families, and all of these things. And you're just seeing a situation where around the world, young people are grappling to say the status quo needs to change in one way or another. So that's been it. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. And then on Twitter, we're #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.